specific vignettes of what will happen to a worker or another worker, and has made people very fearful. Where the economics is what we're saying is that when you look at it, you know, there are very isolated cases. There's no policy that, you know, you can say with 100% certainty is going to, everybody will gain. But the broad economy will gain. The broad group of workers will gain. Families will gain by this policy. But you don't read that in the media. You don't see the editorials. You don't see the interviews with economists who make those cases. It's been very difficult to get people to actually look at the economic research. So what we have are just these notions that if you raise wages, somehow you're going to get price people out of the market. When study after study, as Professor King mentioned, we've got a lot of studies now that have actually looked concretely at what happens. And what we see are benefits for the economy. We see the economy being able to adjust, as it should. What does it say to us if we have an economy that can only generate profits if we leave growing numbers of people in poverty? If we have an economy that sustains itself only because more and more people have to be, you know, pay for food stamps and social programs to support workers who aren't being supported by businesses. So I think, you know, what that suggests is people have very little confidence then in this economy if they think its only way to survive is by throwing people off to the side. And we think that the economics shows that isn't necessary. So I think it's fear, and it's fear that's been created by people who, you know, who think that their profits will go down, not that the economy will perform poorly.
That wraps it up for our edition, this edition of Labor Radio. You've been listening to Mary King, professor of economics at Portland State University, Marty Hart Landsberg, Lewis and Clark, professor of economics, and Robin Hennell, Portland State economics professor. This has been Labor Radio every Monday at 6 p.m. Up the working class, for the working class, by the working class, the only show of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. Tune in every Monday evening and stay tuned now for Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one?
They won't build no schools anymore. They won't build no hospitals. They won't build no schools anymore. They won't build no hospitals. All they build will be prison, prison. All they build will be prison, prison. All they build will be prison, prison.
Good evening, greetings, and welcome to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. This evening, we are here with Mr. Peter Clark, based in Albuquerque, with the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. Peter, how you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, right on. Hey, can you tell folks about IPLDC? Who is Leonard, and what's going on here? Why has he been locked up for so long?
Can I first tell you how much I liked your intro music?
Absolutely.
And Lucky Dubé. And I actually, in the 90s, I got to meet Lucky and actually talked with him about Leonard Peltier, and also someone else who later became a political prisoner in South Africa, Bizwaki Mbule.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 90s, got to speak with him about Leonard Peltier before Mizwaki wound up going to prison. A lot of solidarity there, and appreciate it. But
absolutely, it's all connected.
That's right. To get to your question about the ILPDC, or International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, I know you know the details, Adam, because you're very active and working there in Portland. We had a reorganization of the committee back in the end of April, beginning of May, where we actually created the Indigenous Rights Center, LLC formed here in New Mexico at the behest of Leonard Peltier. It was a long-held dream of his in developing a human rights organization. that worked on the many different, kind of pulled together all the different strings of aspects of working on Leonard's case. You don't wind up just working on Leonard's case. It draws you into all these different aspects of human rights, indigenous rights, and treaty rights. So, Leonard's oldest son, Chauncey Peltier, got back in touch with his father over a year ago. I shouldn't say got back in touch, but visited, actually got to visit with his dad for the first time in a long time.
That's great.
And at that time, Leonard asked Chauncey to start handling Leonard Peltier's artwork, and that led eventually to Chauncey being director and myself co-directing the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee with Chauncey and with the help of everybody who's been working for so long, including Delaney Bruce, who's there in Portland. Since we've been in place since April and May, we've been continuing the long line of activity for Leonard, trying to ramp things up here for the last months of last year and a quarter or a third. I'd have to do the math of Obama's administration. A critical time in the struggle to free Leonard Peltier. And I know Leonard feels that this is his last chance to get out of prison alive under Obama. Feels like if he doesn't get released under Obama, he'll die in prison. And unfortunately, he may be right about that, because we've seen that presidents haven't had the courage to do the right thing by Leonard. We're just coming off a really good weekend here in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. Chauncey traveled from Portland down to Santa Fe for the Indigenous Fine Arts Market. It was the first time that Leonard was included in such a market. And it took a lot of courage on the organizers' part to include Leonard in that market. He got a lot of grief complaints that he was politicizing the market, but it reminded me, and I was struck, that it still takes courage 40 years later. It still takes courage to stand up for Leonard Peltier, because somebody's going to give you a lot of grief about it if you do, but it's going to take everybody's courage to get Leonard free. So we had a great weekend. I think we probably had one of the busiest booths. I'm not talking about sales, although raising money is crucial at this time for the legal end of clemency, but people were thrilled to see Leonard out there, and also to meet Chauncey. It gave people kind of a direct connection to Leonard and the case. We had so many people stop by who said they were really excited that Leonard was being represented there, and had read the articles in the newspaper and wanted to come out and show their support. So it was really uplifting. And one of the things that also was really almost emotionally overwhelming for me was just the coming together of a lot of different struggles. The Apache Stronghold organizers and folks came by the market. They were joined with the Dene Walkers. I can't pronounce it, Dene, but it's the Journey for Our Existence. And many people may have seen them in the news over the last year, really, since January when they first started their walk. But so we had groups like that. There's also a group here in Albuquerque called Unoccupy Albuquerque that came out of the Occupy movement. They've been strong supporters of Leonard here in Albuquerque. We had the Red Nation. So, and the thing that was really striking was that the majority of these groups I'm talking about were young people who weren't even alive when the shootout happened, the shootout and the deaths that occurred and for which Leonard's been incarcerated these many years. So it was really heartening to see young people, when we're out canvassing for Leonard, one of the most common Well, some of the common responses we get are, well, I forgot about Leonard. I thought he got out of prison, or I thought he had died already.
Right. Right.
So in that aspect, it was a really successful weekend. And it's something that coming together of the different struggles and tying together these different strings of the struggle is something important to Leonard, so it's not just focused on him. But, you know, at this time in history, some of these things really do need to be focused on him, because, as I said, this is really his last chance of freedom, we feel.
Right. Well, you know, Leonard and a lot of the kind of how we consider long-term U.S.-held political prisoners have done 30 to 40 years, have died in prison if they're still around today. Of course, people like Marilyn Buck, for example, people who got compassionate release, you know, in their really last days of dying, that they were able to just get out, which, if people aren't familiar with compassionate release, really just refers to, you know, if you're sick and dying, you know, they let you out kind of the last week. So of course, these are the kind of concerns that we have for Leonard and the long-term USL political prisoners. And we've tabled for Leonard before, and definitely getting that response, like you're saying, you know, from people who say, oh, I remember when people were, you know, tabling about Leonard stuff 20 years ago. And it says, well, gosh, yeah, actually, so, you know, he's still in. So it's interesting how, for some people, it's kind of this passive thing. People expect that he's just going to get out, right? And then there's that whole piece with, you know, Clinton, for example. You know, before Clinton got out, he released a few political prisoners, specifically from the Puerto Rican independence movement, and also a couple folks from the Weather Underground. But, Peter, as far as looking at that, maybe for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with Leonard's case, you know, if you could just give a brief kind of just rehash kind of why it is that Leonard's in. And obviously it's not just about one single thing like the shootout at Oglala, but it's about, you know, kind of a larger discourse with colonialism, neocolonialism, mineral extrapolation. So can you briefly just touch on that for any listeners who aren't familiar with why Leonard is so important and what he really represents, or what all political prisoners represent, especially in the indigenous struggles of the Americas?
Well, before going into any history, to answer that question, Leonard, as the special rapporteur, then at the time in 2012, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous People, Professor James and I have visited the U.S. and held listening sessions throughout the U.S. And one of the works of the committee and people dedicated to Freedom for Leonard were to get to those listening sessions or consultations with the special rapporteur and to speak on behalf of Leonard in his case. And Lenny Foster, who's a longtime American Indian Movement and International Indian Treaty Council board member and supervisor of the Navajo Nation Corrections Project, and myself, were able to, I would say, lobby the special rapporteur to include Leonard in what he was compiling, which was called the Country Report on the Situation of Indigenous mm-hmm. Peoples in the United States. So that report came out in, I think it was September of 2012, and this is exactly, to answer your question, Leonard represents an open wound mm-hmm. in Indian country for the Indian people, for Native people. It's an open wound along the lines of the continued occupation of Indian lands, including Black Hills and such massacres as the Sand Creek Massacre. So Leonard represents that open wound, and he represents that time in history where the United States was, federal government was actively trying to terminate the tribes relocating Native people, indigenous people, off their assigned reservations to the cities, and just trying to do away with the tribes. So Leonard comes out of that and is a product of that time. And then, of course, many people may know of what's referred to as the Reign of Terror, which really began in the early 1970s, but certainly after the 1973 Wounded Knee occupation by American Indian Movement and supporters between 1973 and the time of the shootout in 75, the then tribal chairman of Oglala Sioux, Dick Wilson, basically terrorized the traditionalists, anybody who wanted to return to the traditional ways there in Pine Ridge of the traditional way of the Lakota. And he was supported by the FBI and supported by Bureau of Indian Affairs officials and police. And that time, you know, the number I hear most often is 60 unsolved murders from that time of traditional people or people who were in opposition to Dick Wilson and everything he stood for, which was basically, you know, handing over mineral rights and being a puppet for the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So during that time, I think there was over 63 U.S. Marshals assigned to the reservation to Pine Ridge. The FBI set up at the regional office there in Minneapolis and sent in agents to the reservation. You know, basically terrorized the people who live there. And the people who live there already had historical trauma from the 500 years of colonization. And so here it was, the 70s, and the quote Indian Wars were still happening. And many people consider the shootout at Ogallala to be one of the last gun battles of the Indian Wars. And I think that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like we went from let's say Custer or Andrew Jackson to J. Edgar Hoover or what have you.
Right.
And the story goes on. For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. And we're here with Mr. Peter Clark from the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. He's based in Albuquerque and also talking about organizing that's going on here in Portland as well that relates to amnesty campaigns for Leonard. We showed the incident in Oglala, a very detailed documentary film at Clinton Street Theater last week, and that went pretty well, and some folks were able to learn more about the case. Peter, one thing that's also interesting, too, is that people don't realize that the shootout, you know, happened in Oglala that resulted in Leonard's incarceration, but that there were two other people involved in that case that got off on self-defense, and that all three of them, Leonard, you know, Bob and Dino, are originally from out here, right? And they're Northwest Ames. So can you maybe just talk a little bit about that? And you did mention that Leonard's son, Chauncey Peltier, does live in the area as well.
Right. Bob Rapido and Dino Butler were co-defendants of Leonard's. They were tried separately and earlier. Leonard was still in Canada when their trial took place in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Excuse me. And they were allowed to present. You know, I wouldn't say they had a fair trial, but maybe they did have a fair trial. They were acquitted on reasons of self-defense, and they were allowed to present the evidence of that climate of fear, everything that led up to the shootout. They were allowed to put on a full defense, and they were acquitted and by reason of self-defense. Now, when it came time, later Leonard was arrested February 6, 1976 in Canada and extradited on fraudulent means, fraudulent affidavits, manufactured basically affidavits. But he was brought to the U.S. and tried separately. They moved the trial to Fargo, North Dakota, which was a known hostile area, hostile to Native Americans, to Indians, and the jury certainly was drawn from a racist pool. And Leonard wasn't allowed to introduce that evidence of the climate of fear, what was going on, to put that day in context. He was not allowed to do that. And, of course, there was manufactured evidence, which later the federal government had to capitulate to the fact that the shell casings that were used as primary physical evidence were mishandled, could not be proven to have been fired from the gun that the AR gun that they found in Bob Robidoux's burnt out vehicle. I believe that's where they found that gun. But So yeah, there obviously there's long ties with Portland, and obviously there's still large base of support for Leonard there in Portland that you could probably speak to better than I could, being there yourself.
Well, we do have a few events that are planned in the next couple months, and before we close out the program, we will talk about that. But as far as the national context, and obviously where you're located, and you know the rest of the country, and internationally as well, right? Because there's chapters in, or there has been chapters in Australia and a lot of other countries. Leonard's almost probably one of the most famous political prisoners in the world, including probably him and Mumia, as far as being from the North American region. And then, you know, of course, people like Nelson Mandela, you know, in South Africa. But can you talk about, you know, because you're talking about this thing with Obama, you know, and this could be Leonard's last chance. And so what really needs to happen on the ground? Because obviously we can talk about, you know, Obama and any of these kind of politicians, I call them politricks, but, you know, working their magic or whatever, waving their kind of magic wand, letting these people out, right? Having some kind of divine intervention, if you will. But obviously that comes from a sphere of influence. So Peter, what needs to happen on the ground? And I mean, what is happening to kind of maybe create that snowball effect, if you will?
Well, we're reaching out to all the supporters who have been both long time and new to the Leonard's case. We, you know, the committee itself has not planned anything big, but I do think that sometime between 2016 election day and inaugural day, we'll need to really plan something big. And I'm talking about, you know, an event in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. but also events in each other's communities, and maybe those events can happen simultaneously on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
One of the works of the committee has been to always have a presence, and this isn't a demonstration, but a prayer for vigil and outreach at the White House Tribal Nations Conference, which Obama established in 2009. And that's a great time for supporters to actually talk to tribal leaders as they line up to go into the conference and remind them to speak up for Leonard when they can. For people who live on tribal nations, it'd be very important if they could work with their tribal council to either pass resolutions or simply send a letter of support on the tribal letterhead to Obama. And also it would be helpful if they were to carbon copy either the committee or the legal team for Leonard so that we can include those in any clemency paperwork, so to speak. But it's going to take, really, we had an event with Chauncey last night, a reception here in Albuquerque, and I was asked that question, and it's often hard to put into words what has to happen, but a lot of it has to be word of mouth. Like I know two people who, and this is just a, kind of a theoretical thing, but if you know two people who know the case and support Leonard, we'll get with them in your hometown and start to organize simple events like you're doing in Portland. Show a movie, show incident at Ogallala. There was an article recently, just last week, and I think it was San Francisco, I want to say the Examiner, about a guy there who has been putting up Free Leonard Peltier signs all around the East Bay in the Bay Area for years and years. And if everybody did that in their hometown, simply did something to show support, get your city council to pass a resolution saying that they support clemency or release of Leonard Peltier. So it's got to be organic. It's got to be on the ground level. The work that happens with, say, the National Congress of American Indians and United Nations, that support is there, it's documented, mm-hmm. and what really needs to happen is just everybody who believes that Leonard should be free should call the White House, make it a pledge to yourself to call the White House at least once a week. But if you do it with your morning coffee every day, you call 202-456-1111, and you simply say, "I support freedom for Leonard Peltier." gosh, if everybody who heard this or knew about Leonard did that every day or every week, and traditionally we try to encourage everybody to do it on one day. I have the habit of definitely doing it on Fridays. And also nothing can beat a handwritten letter to the White House. We had somebody, I don't want to say his name, but because I didn't get permission to, but he recently wrote a letter to the White House saying that Leonard should be free now and he should be out as a force for good with his artwork and part of reconciliation. And he actually got a phone call back from the White House, and they were very tight-lipped, and he said kind of it felt like it was cloak and dagger. But they said that they got his letter, they understood his points, and they just couldn't comment any further. So those letters do get read. They do go in some file somewhere. I don't believe they just get thrown out. One of the things that when Obama was still senator, and I believe he was on Rosebud, but he was visiting Indian country, and Leonard Crow Dog asked him, what will you do for Peltier? And his only answer was, show me the support. So that's what's got to happen. Popular support has to be shown. And I do think that this is the president that will have the courage to do the right thing. I do believe that Obama, I think he cares about his legacy in Indian country. And I certainly, the First Lady Michelle Obama has shown sincere concern for the plight of people, indigenous people living on the reservations and the Native Americans who are living in the city, particularly with the epidemic of youth suicide and trying to prevent that and giving education opportunities and to the youth. Back in one of the good things about the Indigenous Rights Center is that we're able to give grants, you know, small grants here and there, and that's part of the work. One of the projects is an assistance project, and we were able to not subsidize, but at least help with two youth who attended the White House Tribal Youth Conference back on July 10th.
So, great.
The Indigenous Rights Center is something that I see as a gift from Leonard, because we're able to use his name to do that kind of work and to use his clout, if you will, to bring in some funds to support that kind of work.
So it's not just about Leonard, it's about this whole legacy of all of this kind of work, huh? From Indigenous support to even, I mean, arts and culture to activism to environmental rights as it relates, again, to labor and everything else, which is an interesting point to raise, which is that simply a lot of the larger movement, if you will, if we can call it that, kind of larger struggle for social environmental justice gets so compartmentalized, and especially as we get further and further into the 21st century and people talking about political prisoners or prison stuff is this kind of separate issue over here. And then people are talking about labor stuff and economics over here and so on and so forth. Right. Just like kind of like how people are arguing about Bernie Sanders and stuff, you know, is this economics? Is this race? But again, it's probably about everything. Right. And so this is what Leonard kind of also offers to us. Right. As opposed to just what people offer to Leonard as far as activism or supporting him to get out. It's about what he's really bringing to the table, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's very well put. I don't think I could have said it better, Adam.
And, thanks.
And also, you know, one of the things people can do if they want to get involved is go to whoisleonardpeltier.info. It's just a wealth of information on there. You can find out what's going on currently for Leonard. You can research and learn about his case, because a lot of the trial documents, FOIA documents, documents from his appeals and other court motions in front of the court are on there. And that'll be kind of be the hub of information where people can get involved, find out how to get involved, and stay current as we move forward here. So that's whoisleonardpeltier.info. The Indigenous Rights Center is indigenousrightscenter.org. In a nutshell, that's kind of the fastest way people can learn how to get involved and get some ideas about what they can do in their hometown and grow things.
Great, great. And folks that are in Portland or in the Northwest might know or not know that from year to year, for many years actually, but there's been this legacy as well of having Leonard Peltier clemency marches. Most of them have taken place in Tacoma, Washington, but also further up north too. And so we hope that that will be happening again. But possibly it sounds like that might be happening in Portland. So we urge our listeners to, not only get involved, but to look out for that. And again, you know, strength in numbers, have your head counted. Again, as Peter mentioned, Obama basically said, kind of, in other words, right, show me the money, right? So we got to show that there's this movement, that there's this support, that people really care about Leonard. And we know that people do. It's just a matter of kind of catalyzing all of this great work that people are doing, but scattered nationally and internationally. So, Peter, I'll also
Go ahead. You shouldn't underestimate the signatures on the petition. Over this weekend, we had a lot of support. So Chauncey and I were, you know, pretty much tied to the art booth, but we had other Peltier supporters who came and went through the crowd, and they got over 30 pages of signatures for petition.
Wow.
We're gathering those up. You can get that petition, download it, and go out in your whatever event you're at. If it's a powwow, if it's a ball game, if you're a student, you're on campus, just go out and get the petition signatures and send them into to the main office. Either, you know, you can either send them to Hillsborough or send them to the office in Albuquerque.
Okay.
We'll take care of them.
All right. So, Portland, it's time to pick up the work in Free Leonard Peltier. Also, just a quick note that other events that will be supporting Leonard in the Portland area, there will be many, but one of them that's definitely scheduled, and KBOO is also a sponsor of this event, is going to happen in October 29th, Thursday, October 29th, at the